Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. If you're away from the radio and you want to keep listening, you can do so on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can also stream us on iHeartRadio as well as TuneIn Radio. You can check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. Had a nice, for once we're getting some sunlight. It's finally nice enough to do things outside.
We're getting sunlight, but man, I don't know if it was all the rain we got and then kicking up.
It's you and Gabe.
Cobb, it's brutal out here for the Sinus Warriors. Like, it's tough.
Superfed season, baby.
Allegra D season.
Ooh.
Hand up.
I'm a Claritin and Sudafed guy.
I've tried them all.
Zyrtec.
I'm telling you, I'm a ride or die Allegra D guy.
Zyrtec and Flonase. Got a double dip.
Come on, you amateur. I've got prescription strength Flonase in this bag over here.
Don't need it if you use it every day.
The only thing that's killer, have you seen the Nate Bargatze bit about his dad in Afrin?
Let's hear it.
Oh, geez.
For those that don't know, Afrin, if you are stuffed up, Afrin will work. You will pay the iron price. It is going to absolutely destroy your nose. And the whole bit was about his dad going to the doctor and like he's got a deviated septum, all the things like, and the doctor's like, have you been using Afrin? And Nate points out that his dad has used Afrin basically every single day for at least 35 years. Nope. No, sir.
Well, we pass on our maladies, right? Like, Sarah swears by Benadryl. Like, she doesn't even believe in the common cold. She'll have a sore throat, a cough, runny nose in December, and she's like, no, it's allergies. Benadryl will fix this. That's what my dad told me when I was six. And I was like, I love your dad. I have a great father-in-law, but I don't think he's a doctor. I think you have a common cold. And she's like, no, I don't have a cold. It's allergies. And I'm like,
Cobb, doesn't your father-in-law heal the soul?
He's a man of the cloth, as they say.
Correct. So he's like better than a doctor.
Well, no.
He's the eternal doctor.
Well, that's God alone. I don't think my father-in-law is God.
Well, he's the vessel.
but even he would say, look, I mean, prayer is wonderful. I believe in it. But at the same time, modern medicine exists. Yeah.
We are going to do chemo. So you know.
Come on, right? So, no,
Cobb, this one's gotten so bad. This is like a sign of how old are you getting. I actually thought about going to the doctor. I was like, is this more than just like normal allergies?
Well, geez, man. Like, we got to start taking care of ourselves. Like, I'm to the age now where I don't want to go to the doctor because I'm afraid of what they're going to tell me.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure that's part of it.
Primarily surrounding my sugar intake. You know, a lot of people have their vices and like, you know, whatever. I mean, you could line up a 12-pack of booze, some illicit drugs, or Nerds gummy clusters in front of me, and I'll just shove the illicit stuff to the side. I'm going straight for those Nerds gummy clusters to the point where, like, I mean, I'm going to be diabetic or something, right? Because I can't stop. Like, with sugar, I just can't stop.
Yeah, you can always get gout, the disease of the kings. I used to always love at my yearly physical when you'd get that very, very leading interview from the nurse practitioner, like, what's your workout routine, like going through all these things, and then watching the look on her face when they would take my vitals, and realizing that I was like healthy despite basically doing nothing. Like it used to just perplex them.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It catches up eventually. Heads up. Heads up for those of you out there that think that you don't have to do anything.
I'm afraid I'm nearing that precipice. I will say I did a CrossFit workout on Monday and I got through it. And this is not like a part of my.
Well, you're doing what CrossFit people would do.
Talking about it.
Correct. Yeah. Yes.
My bad.
Yeah. No. So let's tell everyone we got coming up on the program. Let's talk some draft. Let's do best case, worst case. Because I don't know. The rumor that's been going around, we'll talk about it, whether or not the Thunder could actually jump up. Like, where would that rank? So we'll discuss that. What do we actually think the Grizzlies are valuing? What would Zach Kleiman view as a successful draft night? We'll discuss all that here momentarily. Got to get into, have you seen Pete Nakos' latest story over at On3?
Talking about holdouts?
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about this because I think it's very much on the table.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot going on right now in the world of college sports, Jeffrey.
There's a lot going on. We also got spring meetings going on down in Sandestin. Although I've noticed the bylines are Miramar Beach. It's Sandestin. Maybe Sandestin's not like a... Maybe it's because it's a resort. It's not like an actually incorporated place.
I don't know. I'm going down that way myself on Sunday, not for work purposes, but if I end up riding from down there, I might as well do a dateline.
Yeah. Miramar Beach.
Let everybody know I'm at the beach.
Well, it also used to confuse me because as a child of Tom Cruise movies, anyone that's seen Top Gun knows that the original scene is Miramar Beach, but that's Miramar Beach, San Diego.
I'm more of a fan of the firm shot in Memphis, but go ahead.
That's actually the second firm reference in as many days. Did not think that was going to be coming up.
You gave me yesterday's? A nickel for every time.
Yesterday with Herd, we were trying to determine. So did you know that Steven Seagal bought a house in Eads?
Oh, Eads is the place to be, huh?
So I had no idea. He was breaking news to me. And then the story that George had looked up was that Seagal filmed a movie here, liked it, and bought a place in Eads. And I was like, well, I don't remember Tom Cruise like buying a place in, you know, Collierville, but okay.
That's surprising. I mean, hey.
News to me. I'd never heard that.
Yeah, that's awesome. We could use all the kind of like the
action star, the martial arts action star. Yeah.
No. But what was he in? That was in Memphis.
It was a movie that George referenced yesterday that I had never heard of.
Oh, okay.
I was more of a Van Damme guy myself.
The movie's Kill Switch.
Kill Switch.
Never heard of it. Okay.
Me neither, until Google told me.
I mean, yeah. I will say, if you're having to close your eyes and think of like 80s, early 90s action movie, Kill Switch would definitely, like, that's one they just sold up by the name alone.
Yeah, I got the Wikipedia for it up here.
Hang on, let's play Guess That Rotten Tomato Score. Do you got it?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, hit me with a guess.
Can you hit me with who else is starring in this film?
Well, okay, the Memphis connection here is that Isaac Hayes had some sort of a role in this film, which must have been one of the last things he did because the film came out in 08, which is the same year Isaac Hayes died.
This is 08?
Yes.
All right, so Eric has weighed in. Seagal became friends with B.B. King as well when they did the plaque for the Pools Trail outside of FedEx Forum, and Kevin Kane. I think this is Eric doing voice-to-talk.
Would not shock me. He's always doing something.
Kevin Kane introduced B.B. King, and Steven Seagal was by his side. So there's clearly a friendship there.
Also, there's two movies named Kill Switch. Just
all right, so is 08 the Seagal one? I guess that would make sense. Like, and maybe I don't have any recollection of what happened because that's when I was in college. So I wasn't living here every day.
Oh, I just thought you meant you were like blacked out for the entire 4 years.
Last three. Blackout was strong, but you know. Probably rarely sober, yeah.
Okay, well, I regret to inform you that the 2008 Kill Switch with Steven Seagal, though it obviously had a lasting impact on him and his desire to move to Shelby County, it does not hold an official critical score.
Do we have an audience score?
Yes.
Okay, so audience is going to be, Seagal's people are Seagal's people. I'm going to say like 82.
Well, the popcorn meter, if that's what you're referring to, is at 16%.
Oh, wow. Even his people hated it.
But actually, you know what's crazy? It's not only, I guess, was it filmed in Memphis? I guess it was set in Memphis. Like the
yeah.
I guess it's the only reason why you would film it in Memphis. It's not like
weirdly in the 90s, we were like, I don't know if we were offering the handouts to get the film industry. Like in the 90s, we were having a lot of stuff filmed here, and then it weirdly moved to Atlanta, and then Louisiana got in on it. Like Battlefield, I always remember that Battlefield LA.
I mean,
was filmed in, was really Battlefield Louisiana.
Memphis was the Hollywood of the East there for a minute.
Of course, everyone knows that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised Caleb Wilson didn't mention it in his draft interviews.
That's a great point. You know, the interesting thing about it is, you know, it's in the East, but they play in the West.
It's fascinating.
Interesting stuff. We'll get into the list. Jason Smith's going to join us during the second hour. Cobb and his cohorts over at CBS had to vote on top college football coaches. Tom Fornelli has written up the top 25 based on all of Cobb and his coworkers, their rating system. What do you do? Do y'all just put it in a Google Doc?
Yeah, and this year, the ballot was such that you could see what other people voted.
I like that.
I'm not sure I do, because I sometimes like really veer a little bit. And then you get put on blast, because they're blasting people for voting Bill Belichick last. And I'm like, I'm sorry, he's the worst coach in the Power Four. Like, anyway, so you end up having to justify it in Slack and all this, because people can see what you voted, right? Like, can you imagine, like, if you could just go and Google search, like, what anybody voted for in, like, a political election? Golly, it would be horrible. So it's like...
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. Be able to defend... Okay. Get, Cobb, if you ever know me, to be able to not defend my take. You can disagree with me. You can think my take is wrong. I will always give you my take.
Here's what happened to me. So I went to vote in the primary a couple weeks ago, and they were like, oh, I'm sorry, it says you don't have a ballot. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's fine. Like, I wasn't like,
this is your first Kentucky experience?
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I didn't actually register, but I thought I had when I got my vehicle registered, because you could do them both at once. I was almost positive I had. And then they were like, yeah, did you register as a Republican or a Democrat? And I was like, to be quite honest, I probably didn't register as either.
Right.
And they were like, well, that's why you can't vote. This is a primary. There's nothing for you to vote for if you're not registered with either party. And I was like, all right, so I guess I'll see y'all in November.
Okay, I'm going back to Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, they were like, you can have a sticker, though. And I was like, I mean.
But I didn't vote.
And the sticker says I voted. And they were like, yeah, but you tried. And I was like.
But that's okay. That is the ultimate participation trophy.
So I put the sticker on. I was like, oh, well, at least I went to
you
the
should,
ballot.
No, you should have. Actually, you should have said, I take it, and then gotten a Sharpie and wrote, I tried to vote.
Right. So, I mean, that was very, like, I felt pretty dumb walking out of there being like,
eh.
I guess, okay, independents can't vote in the primaries. Now you know.
You felt dumb because you didn't know that stipulation?
I think I knew that, but, like, in my mind, I was thinking, well, surely there's at least something.
Right, there's some local election tied with it, yeah.
Nonpartisan, like, I guess nonpartisan races don't have primaries? Like, I don't know, whatever. I couldn't vote.
Sorry for your loss.
Thanks.
Okay. We got the draft. So, do you have in your mind, Tuesday night, whatever, let's say 10:30, after the end of the first round, what would you deem as successful for the Grizzlies?
I mean, probably almost anything. The only way I'm going to come away with it mad is... Zach Klein is standing up there talking about how in love they are with Mikael Brown Jr. Like, that's the only one that's going to make my blood boil. Now, unless there's some weird circumstance where he falls to 16, and then we're talking about Cam Boozer and Mikael Brown Jr., then I'll be okay with it. But, like,
yeah, there is the weird value thing that we do in our heads of, like, well, I don't really like Mikael Brown at 8, but 16, okay. But in reality, we are still saying, like, the reason why I don't like Mikael Brown at 8 is, like, red flags.
Yeah,
but it's almost like at the 16 price point, it's like, well, we just got to take it.
Yeah, like, okay, I guess there's some things. Like, here are the things that would make me disgruntled.
Okay.
They, they trade up to get Mikal Brown Jr. Or like they trade down to six for some haul that is not overwhelming. And then they just take Wogler or Acuff and they pass on the opportunity to take Boozer or Wilson. And in return, they get like a 2029 first round pick with some weird protections on it. Like that wouldn't excite me. Like, you know, but there's all this kind of NBA rumor mill bluster out there about all these teams trying to get in the mix for a shot to take Caleb Wilson or Cam Boozer. And it's like, well, to do that, they would have to make a deal with somebody, probably the Grizzlies, to get in position to do that. So it's like, I don't think the Grizzlies are entertaining that, but if they did and they took a return on that wasn't up to snuff, like that would be upsetting to me. But honestly, Jeffrey, any of the options at three, I'm going to be okay with. Okay, let's say Darren Peterson somehow is still there. Okay, I'm not going to be mad about that. High, high, high upside. Red flags, yes, but like could be the best player in this class 5-10 years down the line, 3 years down the line. Boozer, totally fine with. Caleb Wilson, not my first choice at that position, but I would still be excited about it. He would crush the press conference.
It would take us 6 seconds to, like, all we have to do is just pull up one Instagram reel and we're like, all right, we're in.
Yeah, he's a good dude, good player, a lot of upside. They'd really have to mess it up. They'd really have to mess it up for me to come out of draft night at 10:30 p.m. thinking, oh man, wow, they really botched this. Like, there's only a couple of things that they could do that would really make me facepalm and say, what are we doing here?
And I think, to your point, the things that would have to happen almost feel like, I just don't think they would actually do that. So, like, even for instance, all right, let's say somebody offers you a haul. Zach Kleiman clearly identified in February, I want to be in this draft, and I want to be as high as possible. And I am signing Taj Gibson to make sure that we make that happen. Like, so he clearly values this draft. Jumping up into the top three gets you into a position where you can get an actual franchise cornerstone for a team right now that does not have one. Maybe Cedric is that guy, but as of right now, I think most of us would agree Cedric feels like on a really good team, a great team, like an awesome number two to have, like in an ideal vision.
Yeah.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't really see them doing that. I really do think, and maybe this is loser mentality, maybe this is not worrying about myself, if these rumors of Oklahoma City actually jumping up and getting in front of the Grizzlies, if that's true, I think I'm going to be annoyed. It's not, and that's not going to be the fault of the Grizzlies. And I want to be very clear. Like, I won't come in on Wednesday and crush the Grizzlies because that's out of their control.
But it's still something that could happen that would make you less happy.
Correct. Like, honestly, that is my worst case scenario. And maybe this is getting a little bit older, maybe not necessarily being like the most give me all the risk guy. I think if they move up and take Boozer, because I've kind of decided Boozer's the guy that I would want at three, I think that would add to it. Even though in your scenario, that means that you're probably getting Peterson.
Yeah.
And not that that is a bad scenario, but it does feel like Peterson could be the type of guy that either takes your franchise to unbelievable heights or you're doing this again in 3 years.
I think there's a lot of Ja Morant PTSD when you talk about Darren Peterson around Memphis because you've had drama with your star lead guard now for so many years that you look at a guy who already has it. Ja Morant played 2 years of college basketball with zero drama.
Yes.
Darren Peterson played 1 year of college basketball with more drama than any one and done star that I can remember. I mean, you could say Zion and his shoe exploding or whatever, but like,
I totally agree with you.
You know, like, yeah. So I think there's a little bit of PTSD there, and I'm not saying that you're unjustified in that, but I'm willing to take the risk. I'm willing to take the risk on Darren Peterson's talent if he is there at three. I get out of here with any discussion about trading or parting with assets to move up and get him. Forget all that. Wouldn't want any part of that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, if the Grizzlies wound up with Darren Peterson, I would be fine with it. I do not want to move up to get him.
No, no. But I'm willing to take the risk. I am, right? Like, with Darren Peterson, the shot making, the size, the on ball, the ability, the versatility in his offensive game is just next level. And then he's got the size to be less of a liability and maybe more of a net neutral on defense. Whereas Ja, I mean, obviously with his lack of size and as of, you know, the last couple of years, it was often an effort issue. Flashing back to that Lakers game in particular, which I just can never, I can't erase that.
Like, it's a tough visual.
It is so tough. But no, I would get on board in a hurry with Darren Peterson at three. And I think most Memphians would as well. Not to say you totally dismiss or compartmentalize the concerns over what happened during his freshman year at Kansas. I mean, I didn't gloss over that stuff. I mean, I was saying all along, I thought AJ is worth number one over Darren for a lot of those reasons. But to me, there's enough of a gap there between AJ and Darren, Cameron and Caleb, and then your guards. Like, it is so clearly defined for me. It's those two, AJ and Darren, Cam and Caleb, everybody else. And so if you get a chance to pick somebody from a tier above your slot, I'm all for it.
Yeah, because to your point, come that Wednesday, we'll all collectively just go, fresh start. What happened in the past is, hey, that was Kansas. That was you looking out for yourself. Now you're a Grizzly. Now you're going to be a professional.
The Grizzlies training staff would never allow a creatine.
No, never. Now, could he have sat down for 6 weeks for a boo-boo? Yeah.
Oh, well, that he'll fit perfectly. Yeah, in the,
exactly.
The Grizzlies.
I mean, he's already – there are arguments that he's a pre-Grizzly.
The smallest threat of an injury. Yeah. You're sitting down. He's going to love that. He's going to fit in perfectly in Memphis. Oh, you have a cut on your finger? All right, we're going to reevaluate you.
Well, you can never be too safe.
You can never be too safe. Yeah, 6 to 8 weeks, reevaluate. You know, go to the clinic. And then, you know, then maybe around late March, we'll get you back in there.
I know it was your stat, and it kind of ends up being somewhat of a pile on.
The KCP thing?
Yeah. It's not just Dez went and played 82 games. Laravia played 82. KCP coming in immediately, like, not playing 65 games. Like, it hurts the case that he got a legitimate injury. But, like, it is kind of funny. It's like, guy that has the reputation of just playing all the games, like, come to Memphis. Like, yeah, you're a part-time player.
Literally no active player in the NBA had played 65-plus games in more seasons consecutively than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Well, you want that streak to end, come on to
the 901. We got room for you. All right, so best case. I've just decided in my head, like, I don't really care if they give up two additional firsts. If you leave with Cam and you trade up and you get Acuff, or let's say you view Wagler, whichever one you view, you trade up to five or to six, whatever, and you get first pick of the guard that you like the best, that for me is best case scenario.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting as it pertains to the draft withdrawals and, like, the Grizzlies guard situation. I believe they had Tyler Tanner in for a workout.
Yeah, I think DeMichael put that yesterday. I think he had four guys yesterday.
Yep.
He's going back to Vandy. So that from a Grizzlies perspective, like, I looked at that in two different ways. Like, David Cobb, the college basketball writer, was kind of fired up that Tyler Tanner's going back to Vanderbilt.
Like, Number one, we got a guy whose name we know. Number two, he's actually going back to the same school. It's like, he's a unicorn.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, all right, that's cool. I like Tyler Tanner coming back to Vandy. Like, good for Vandy. Good for Tyler Tanner. But then the other part of me was like, dang, if he had been there at 32, like, I know some people will immediately revert to Kennedy Chandler 2.0, but, like, at 32.
Who cares?
I was like, it's a dice roll. You know, so I was a little disappointed from the Grizzlies' perspective that he decided to go back to college.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is, realistically, how how far up could they move from 16?
I mean, it depends how much they're willing to part with. Like, what's the price? Like, that's all. That's the question. They can move up as far as they want to, but what are they going to have to pay to get there? You got a lot of draft assets. This is a really good draft. And then, like, I think the element of uncertainty with all this is this whole idea around, what is it, next year's first-round pick that is so up in the air right now because of the proposed rule change?
Yes.
Like, what
so
the heck?
For those that are unclear, so it has not been ratified yet, and it does feel like there's enough people making a stink about it that it could get reevaluated.
Gosh, if it were the Lakers or the Spurs or the Knicks, I mean, it would already be off the table. Can you imagine if it were the Warriors? Like, Steve Kerr would have already, like, crapped his pants 10 times on national TV over this. But, like, it's Memphis, and so, okay, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be that guy, because it annoys me sometimes when, like, we play the victim card or whatever.
Yes.
But, like, come on, what are we doing here with this?
So, George, remind me the best of. It's Minnesota,
Cleveland,
yep. And Utah.
So the actual pick that has been traded was Utah's first round pick, but it does have the qualifier to where you could make that a
right.
swap with
so
Minnesota
it
and
is
Cleveland.
The, whatever would wind up being the best pick of Minnesota, Cleveland, and Utah.
Yep.
And while Utah will clearly be significantly better next year,
we think.
I think it is fair to say going into the season, the other two teams would have higher win totals.
So the stipulation, though, under this yet-to-be-ratified NBA anti-tanking policy would be that teams wouldn't be allowed to have what? What is the
so
rule?
So top five. So I guess we are kind of getting pre-mad, but it does take away a potential chip. So, and I understand that. But it would be, this would be Utah's third consecutive top five pick.
Which would be impermissible, and that would apply to you, even though you're just—it's not even their pick.
Correct. I think it even applies so much as the Grizzlies. I think it conveys.
So my question was, as it pertains to the 2026 draft coming up, that's not as valuable of a trade chip as you might hope if there's some real fear that whoever winds up with that pick won't be able to use it if Utah's bad. Like,
it seems like what we need to root for is like the Jazz to finish sixth,
right,
and not move up. But I think they're kind of going to be better than that. Like, I know, I mean, it's fun to like just crap on the Jazz. Go look at the roster. Like, they're going to be good next year. Like, I don't know if they're going to be top six in the NBA or in the West good, but they're going to be good.
Right? They should be playing. I mean, you can't play Jaren Jackson Jr. 65 plus games and just like completely.
I mean, they're
going to
have Markkanen, Keontae George, presumably Ace Bailey. Kessler's been a good player for them. They've got another, what they're going to have the number two pick.
Filipowski's been good for
Filipowski's
them.
Filipowski's been good. Like,
they've got some straight up dudes on that team.
Like, tall dude.
Now, I don't know if all those guys end up being part of the roster, but it's like, if they're not, that means they got guys that they think are going to be better. They ended up trading for them. So we are getting a little pre-mad, but at the same time, well, let's say they finish, what, 12th? Then they wind up with the double ping pong ball situation.
Right. I think that's the part of it that we haven't exactly touched on. It's been so centered on, okay, look what this could end up being, but there's a higher possibility of this actually happening because of the rest of the rule. The 3-2-1 rule also expands the lottery and flattens the odds for every team involved, because think about it, we're also now including teams that just are in the play-in, whether they win or lose, and it's a flatter odd for everybody. They can make the play-in, win, make the playoffs, and still have a ping pong ball, and it could still end up screwing the Grizzlies.
Right.
It's also why, if they would have just done the whole 3-2-1 thing and not included the conditions, I was more in on it. I just think the problem is when you start inviting conditions and exceptions, it starts treating things as equals that are not equals. Like, this draft is not going to be the same as next draft.
Right.
Like, getting the Wizards getting the number one pick in the Richichet draft is not the same as getting the number one pick in the Wembanyama draft.
Not by a long shot. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like if at the end of the day, to move up to get your dream scenario, Jeffrey, yeah, various stuff, you trade this next year's first round pick that has all this uncertainty around it. I mean, would you be okay with that?
I would be. I'm at the point where, because of the same idea, like, I don't think all drafts are the same. Like, in the end, you're trying to build a roster. And so, if you're spending two firsts and they're unprotected, like, fine. Like, because I look at it this way. It's like, all right, there's no way, real way of knowing it. But if Acuff would have come back to school, there's a legitimate chance when you look at the prospects for next year, he could have been the number one pick. And especially, like, think about it like this. We're so just go with the wind. You know, everybody's bringing up the Becky Hammon 3-year-old quote about your best player can't be big. But if the Knicks somehow do this and Brunson is the finals MVP, well, all of a sudden everybody's looking for their small guard.
True.
Especially one that can shoot like Acuff. And by the way, anybody want to put up Brunson's defensive highlight tape?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jalen Brunson is kind of one of one. He's also smaller. No,
I totally agree, but I also know how sports leagues work.
Well, no, I mean,
like, think how many guys have we drafted that threw sidearm because of Mahomes?
Right.
Like,
well, I think quarterback's actually a great take.
Well, like, and he, like, Josh Allen, like, Trey Lance should go and thank Josh Allen every single day because that's the only reason he got drafted.
Well, yeah, it's like we love the measurables on quarterbacks the same way we do with lead guards, but that doesn't mean you can't have a productive career from a Russell Wilson or now a Bryce Young starting to come into his own as an NFL quarterback. Well, they're not going to be the rock stars of the NFL combine because they're not 6'6". They can't throw the 40-yard out route to the opposite hash on a dime, but like it doesn't mean they're not so good players. So, I mean, you just have to be like the hit rate is just going to be slimmer. So, like,
by the way, this was one of those ones where it's like, I kind of agree with Becky Hammon. Like in general, like we pointed out, you have to like, all right, let's give him Steph Curry. Like for the sake of being fair in the argument, even though I would go, that guy has got a skill set that makes him. That sets him into a different category. But it's like, if you want to basically say this guy was the best player, it's basically Steph and Isaiah. So all the way back in like the late 80s.
So the discourse around this Becky Hammon quote is in relation to like, oh, see, she was wrong because the Spurs have Victor Wembanyama and he's their best
player. No, it's New York doing what New York does. She made the comments, by the way, 3 years ago. And, you know, it's, well, everyone's kind of taking the victory lap, like the finals are here. But I mean, I don't know if the Knicks get beat in five, does every reporter owe her an apology?
Yeah, see, I mean, if you want to go based on the archetype of the best player on the best team in the NBA, I mean, until proven otherwise, that's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And who's the player in this coming draft class that best fits that player archetype? I think it's Darren Peterson.
More so than AJ?
Yeah, I mean, DP's what? About almost exactly the same height as Shai.
Why did I think DP was 6'4"?
Well, I don't know what he measured in without feet, but like he was listed at 6'6". And that's what...
Yeah, Shai's at 6'6".
What Shai is as well. So like the lead guard who can with decent size who can control the game. Sorry, like he's the two-time reigning MVP. He's looks like he's on a team that's going to win the NBA Finals again. Like so, if we're playing that game, I think that's a big check in the Darren Peterson column.
Yeah, I don't know. The Thunder to me are such a unique case study. Because I always feel like when I'm watching them, the sum of their parts are greater than what I think the actual players are. Mm. Like, we have evidence that suggests Alex Caruso is an NBA basketball player. I mean, he got an $82 million deal from the Bulls. But when you watch him on the Thunder, you think that he is a better player.
Yeah, you drop Alex Caruso onto the Wizards. Nah. Like,
Jared McCain, the Sixers decided they were done. Like, gone. Like, SGA, like, he is their best player. And I think what the Thunder do that is so smart is you don't have to have, like, this internal combustible situation. Like, who's getting the ball? They know who's getting the ball on the fat, like, the entire, like, he's the offense. He might pass it, but, like, it starts with him, and there's no like, arguments. Like, Jalen Williams isn't pining, like, creating drama. Like, I find it hard to believe that if SGA were to get hurt next year and Jalen Williams takes over and is, like, the number one guy, I don't know if Jalen Williams is going to be the guy that says at the end of the season, this was the greatest year of my career. Like, I don't foresee that being an issue. But it does feel like they've built this team. And it's like, I don't know if every single player is this awesome player, but it's like everyone buys in and everyone has the role. And because they have so much depth, you're just left. Like, I'm always left at the end of a Thunder game not going, that guy's incredible. That guy's incredible. I always leave thinking, that team's incredible.
Well, that's, I think, why they're the, well, that's what makes them so much different than the LeBron Warriors super team era. And,
yeah.
And for that matter, coming prior to that, you had MJ, and then you had the Kobe Shaq kind of yep. era. Like, it's a new frontier in the NBA. Does that mean, though, that you have to replicate it? Like, do you have to replicate it? Or, because I mean,
I would say no. A, I don't know if you can, because, like, in the end, part of it is you had to have Paul George. You had to make the decision. You were trading Paul George at the specific point in time when the league was overvaluing known commodities. And so you got this haul from the Clippers that I don't know if that's a reasonable thing to expect. But what I would say is, like, you don't have to be as good as them tomorrow. And I know everyone loves to do the, well, they're going to figure out ways. Like, they know they can't pay everybody. And so at a certain point, their depth is going to somewhat take a step back. And the idea would be by, you know, 4 years from now, can you be better than whatever they are?
Well, it makes a lot of sense why they would want to get a lucrative high-end draft pick
this
year, because they can get a low-cost, high-level replacement for some of the players who they're going to have to pay up for. And there are teams out there who would be willing to take on any number of these Thunder players who are going to be having hefty bills come due. I mean, but to your greater point, like, in the post-COVID era, we've seen franchises driven by singular stars win titles. I mean, you look at Milwaukee. I mean, that was Giannis and who else?
Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton.
I mean, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I mean, guys that are good players, but, like, this is also, I think, the danger of the NBA. You win and get good, and you decide you got to pay these guys. And the reality is, it's like, nope, you should have paid Giannis. Or, yeah, you should pay Jokic. But you wind up in this situation where your number three guy is making 40-something million, and you're like, oh, my God.
Well, look, if it makes it harder to have a dynasty, then I think that's actually, I don't know, you could look at it one or two ways. Like, on a certain level, I think that the Warriors at their heyday, even, you know, with or without KD, they ran the NBA in a way that I thought that was more compelling than, say, the way the Dodgers run baseball. Like, the way the Dodgers run baseball, it almost just takes
well
the
because out. Like, to a certain degree, like, even though it's overblown, they drafted Steph, they drafted Clay, they drafted Draymond,
right? So they didn't just go out and buy all these guys necessarily.
Correct.
But I think it's going to be harder, and we're seeing it right with the or we'll, we will see over the coming years whether the Thunder can do what the Warriors did. And I think it's going to be harder, as you often talk about, like, these guys are going to be eligible for maxes and super maxes. And because they are homegrown talents, like, Oklahoma City will be able to pay some of these guys more than any other franchise could. But to do that, they're going to have to, part with the depth, part with, like, the Sean Livingston-esque type of characters who are supporting roles in Golden State Dynasty. And, like, can Oklahoma City maintain this the way Golden State did with the way the financial construct of the NBA works now? And if they can't, like, I'm all for that. But I'm curious because it opens the door, obviously, for the Grizzlies and everybody else. But is that better for the NBA? Or is the NBA better off, like, when there is this singular dominant force? I think there's a difference. I think that the NBA is better off when that singular dominant force is a marketable team like Golden State that has stars like Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, a big personality like Draymond Green, a well-known visible coach like Steve Kerr. I don't really see any of that with OKC. Like, the great team. Nobody gives a flip about what Mark Dagenhalt says. Shea is like the most boring superstar ever. I can't think of a less
but
two-time reigning MVP.
But would you not agree, if you're coaching, that's the best superstar to have? Like, that's the thing that's annoying. I totally agree. In terms of a entertainment product, you're 1,000% right. With that being said, if SGA could be my lead dog, hell yeah.
Please, yeah. I mean, if they're your team, you love them. And you hate this conversation that we're having because you say, I don't care. It's my team. They're dominant. They're going to have a dynasty. I don't care if it's better for the NBA, right? But, like, if you take a step back and you're not a fan of the Thunder, you're like, all right, are we really going to sit here and let these guys run the league for the next 5 years, 10 years? Like, I mean, that doesn't seem interesting to anybody.
Well, and so far, nobody's proven that they've been able to back it up. And they're the first team that has the opportunity. And it's like, are they going to be able to, like, is this going to be two and done now that they're going to start paying everybody? Or is it going to be like, hey, man, the next decade, the rest of the decade is all through them? All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we got potential opt-outs and what could be a legitimate concern about maybe boycotts and who knows what coming up this fall. Let's talk about it next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
David has written about an idea that John Calipari has about moving the SEC tournament. We'll talk about it during the list as well as get an update from the world of sports. We'll do all that. Jason Smith also going to join us during the next hour. But over at On3, we have, of course, SEC spring meetings going on. But Pete Nakos has written about a topic that I think has been at least bubbling at the surface, and now it seems to be a talking point. The story is entitled, "With college football under 100 days away, SEC athletic directors running scenarios as NIL deals remain in limbo." Here's what Pete says. "With north of $100 million in NIL deals in the clearinghouse in limbo, coaches have openly talked to On3 about their fears of players potentially holding out if deals are not paid out. With schools spending roughly $13 million on rosters through revenue sharing, top contracts are funded by a mix of third-party NIL deals that must be approved by the clearinghouse. Sources told On3 some signed contracts include provisions that state deals are subject to clearinghouse approval. Scott Strickland said, quote, "You run through a lot of scenarios in your head of what if the environment we're in right now, that's probably at the top of my mind. What if? I don't know what happens in that scenario. It's certainly something to think about." Another SEC athletic director said, "Everything is on the table. If players' contracts are left unpaid before the start of week one, nothing would surprise me." And I think that "nothing would surprise me" goes to the idea of holdouts. And I think, Cobb, for me, there's two key questions. I do think this is an issue, but I think it falls into one of two categories. If what's actually happening is the schools have overpromised money that they don't have, well, all bets are off. But if what is actually happening is that they have the money, but it's tied up in the CSC and it's not getting approval, I think that that is less of an issue, because I think what's going to happen is that the SEC and the Big Ten are basically just going to say, like, all right, we're rewriting these rules and you're gonna just go ahead and pass these things through.
Yeah, if the schools have the money and it's just being held up by the new regulating body, yeah, they're going to figure out a way to get the money into the hands of those players so that those players will play. What I think is happening, though, is that players are being promised certain amounts of money primarily to be funneled to them via third-party collectives. And those promises were made based on projections, based on hope, based on handshake deals with donors and corporate entities that you hope comes to fruition, but that you don't know for a fact will come to fruition.
Well, Sportico wrote about it. There's a handful of these teams that have gotten into bed with what appears to be like a direct-to-consumer apparel company. And part of what the enticement was stock options. And so a lot of these teams 2 months ago were thinking they had $4 million. Well, here's what happened. Somebody called the bluff and sold the stock with the price at a high, cashed out. The stock price went way down. And now some of these schools that thought they had $4 or $5 million have $400,000.
I mean, some of the absolute gross mismanagement, stupidity, just bluffing, lying, saying whatever you want to say to get players to sign is always been an issue in college sports. But before, you were promising playing time. You were promising a certain experience. You were selling
A car.
Whatever, something under the table that wasn't insignificant.
It's the Buddy Garrity.
Probably not seven figures.
Well, I'll take care of it.
Right. Well, you can de-recruit in the old way. You can promise playing time, promise love and affection, promise that it'll be one big family. And then the first day they get underneath the bench press, you dog cuss them. They don't see the field the first eight games of the season, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just the way it worked, right? But like, you take that same approach, but you take it with money. Well, that doesn't work. You can't promise money and then under deliver on money. Like, you can't operate like that. And I think some programs are operating like that. And
I think there's one other factor at play also from the other side. And this is where I don't want to just blindly take the school side, but I think the other problem is guy thinks that he's signing for, I don't know, let's say 800 grand. Well, he's got this agent that's going to take 35%. And then when he sees his check, he's like, wait a minute. I was told I was getting this amount of money and the predatory agent has taken care of it. And now all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, this wasn't what I was promised.
Well, did you see the deal or the stipulation on agent fees that's a part of this new congressional bill?
Yep.
5% cap on agent fees. It's no wonder, dude. My Twitter timeline, because I follow a bunch of these agents, some of whom I know a little bit, and like, they hate this bill. They hate it. Some of the backlash that I've seen on this congressional bill from the player agent side, not from players themselves, because I don't think players are really like, there is no players union. Players aren't dialed in on this stuff, but the agents and like the college sports players organizations that aren't actually
the ecosystem.
Right. Like, they are mad over this stuff because the agent fees would be capped. The player compensation would be capped. You're talking about the eradication of third party. I mean, you're an agent. Think about this. Like, you've built a business with a very nice income. I mean, if you have 20 clients right now who are of any ability at the Power Four or high major level in either sport, like, you are doing fantastic. If you're ranking 20% off the top and you have 15 or 20 guys who are playing high major basketball, you're making millions of dollars. Like, millions of dollars. You're flying private jets. You are an agent who didn't have a job in this space 5-6 years ago, and you are living on the stars now. And now all of a sudden they want to come in with this bill. One, it's going to cap your fees at 5%. and it's going to probably reduce what your clients make by half, maybe. Let's just say that. Like, you're all of a sudden going from maybe making $7 or $8 million a year as an agent to hope maybe clearing a mill. And oh, I'm not crying any tears for these guys, but like, that's why you're seeing backlash here, is these agents are not okay with anything that would reduce their commission or reduce, you know, what their players are going to make.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel. I'm in the camp of, I have the utmost respect for Ross Dellinger as a reporter. Like, I think he is
the best,
a phenomenal reporter. My issue is not Ross and his reporting in the story. My issue is the fact that everyone takes these bills as if it's a certainty when the same thing is going to happen. Even though this is done by Cruz and I forget the woman from Washington.
Yeah.
Maria Cantwell. Yeah. It's still going to have to go to the House of Representatives and it's going to be dead there.
Well, that's what it sounds. I mean, I was surprised that, and I guess I shouldn't be, but this thing has, it's being introduced in a bipartisan manner. There's a Republican and a Democrat who are introducing it. So you think, oh, they wouldn't have even brought it this far if they didn't feel like they had the support of their respective camps. But the way Ross's story makes it sound is that like there is very little Democratic support and that there are some Republicans as well who might be prone to jump ship. So like,
no, in reality, like this is, Ross can't write this because it's tough to report, but it's like in the end, what's actually happening is that Ted Cruz, who is being heavily funded by Cody Campbell, Cody Campbell has a desire. He's operating for him. Maria Cantwell is operating because she saw what happened to Washington State. And that's her primary motivation, like not wanting that to happen again, but it's still not going anywhere. Now,
what I'm hearing, you're hearing you say is that the Big Ten and the SEC are not represented here.
Correct. And there's no reason why they would go.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.